Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
James Conner!
Yay!
I broke another chair at the buzzer! Woo!
That was an hour... No, that wasn't even an hour ago. That was 38 minutes ago or so. Some text messages I received from a friend of mine, pit friend of mine. I've never been more invested in a non-sporting event in my life. Tremendous radio, he said. I can't believe he broke another chair. An anonymous coworker of ours. That was extremely entertaining, though. This one from Jermichael Finley. He did better than I thought, but missed some gimmies. Jermichael's a born hater. He just is.
He's like him myself, so there you go.
I do like him. I have a soft spot for him.
He cheers for the New York Mets.
Yeah.
Yes, boo, says this fireman here.
Well, Pony cheers for the Mets. You boo him.
Yes.
Well, fair enough. You're consistent. You're a Yankees fan, though, right?
That's true.
Yeah, you are a Yankees fan, so that's kind of part and parcel with liking the Yankees is you don't like, you know.
Derek Jeter, winning guy.
The Metropolitans. A lot of people enjoyed that. And what was that? That was Callis passing on the very last question, his Pittsburgh sports media citizenship test. I thought I set a perfect number. He needed 12 of 20 to pass, and he got exactly 12. I also was happy to have reversed the order of the final two questions to make it so that the final question was all for all the marbles. And it was a layup. It was. But people have blown layups or missed dunks to lose basketball games before. You did not. It was, the answer was James Conner, and it was a pretty easy question.
I'm Mr. Clutch.
You are Mr. Clutch. We are, of course, here at the Upper St. Clair Volunteer Fire Department. 2025 Fan 5 Alarm Marathon, presented by Allegiant Community Federal Credit Union. Also brought to you by North Country Brewing, by Charles Leach Insurance, Aircraft Management Group, and the National Fire Sprinkler Association. You know what, Callis? Before we dive into a little baseball, a little Paul Skeens and some Pirates, I do think this is and we had, by the way, the next up on the fan guys in trying out, and I'm like all primed on all these like takes and subjects because, man, they were rattling off a bunch of different things. We had a gentleman here, though, one of the volunteer firefighters, who had to leave because he's a high school junior about to graduate. So think about this. You're like 16 years old. No one can tell you anything. Like, I'm in high school. I'm the bleep, the you-know-what. Think about the kind of person that is joining the volunteer fire department, that wants to be a volunteer firefighter, that's in their teenage years, that has to understand some of the dangers associated with being a volunteer firefighter. Hint, they're the same dangers faced by firefighters for the city of Pittsburgh, let's say, who are not on a volunteer basis, who that's their career. This is somebody taking time out of the day to come down here and be ready if the call is needed. And I think that takes a special kind of person, a special kind of makeup to be that kind of person. And that's why we're doing what we are doing right now. We are trying to raise money to help volunteer fire departments in the area. They are contributing, or they're competing with other very necessary things, police, EMS, in municipal budgets. Some places need it more than others. Some places are in better shape than others. But they all need it to some degree. They need help. Because if it's not from fundraisers, if it's not from things like what we're doing, it's a tax that gets added for everybody in. That could be tough, obviously. Harry, you ran for local political office, so you know how bare-knuckle that can be. Mm-hmm. Help these people, because they would help you without a second of hesitation if and when the time comes. You hope you never need them to show up, unless it's for something cool like a parade. But if it's for something not so cool, they'd be there for you. So that's why this is important to us. And I'll remind you, by the way, that it's very easy to donate. Right now, you can text FIRE, F-I-R-E, to 412-207-3456 on the Don's Appliance text to donate line, or go online, 937thefan.com. Let's talk a little baseball. I want to know, Callis, because I'll be very blunt. I like you and Crowley and Doran, but I do not often get up and have like the wherewithal to turn on the radio in the mornings. Sometimes I'm just wrangling children, etc. What was your big stance when the should they or shouldn't they trade Paul Skeens debate cropped up? How did you handle that particular little line of thought?
So my first thought is assuming Ben Cherington would make that trade at this point. No, don't let him do that just on that front. But let's say Ben Cherington wasn't the one making the decision. I still say no, because in trades, you're not guaranteed to necessarily get players to develop at a point where you want them to be. Paul Skeens is already doing the thing, right? He's already pitching at a highly impressive rate. He's already well impacting this Pirates team. And I think that in the right setting, you could build around him by moving your other assets. But to trade him to get back, even if it's one of the bigger hauls that you see in a trade, I mean, like, what are the odds that, you know, any veteran players you may get back, are they going to perform? That's a hypothetical because you don't know. Or, like, what are the odds that the prospects that you
get back?
So it's
a bird in the hand right now versus three or four in the bush that you have no idea about.
Yep, sorry, I'm speaking slow because I'm tired. But, yeah, no, that's a good way to summarize it.
I'm going to stop you for 1 second. The Indiana Pacers have done it again. I know this is not necessarily a massive NBA town. Tyrese Halliburton has hit yet another game-winning shot with 0.3 left on the clock. They stage a massive rally against one of the stingiest defensive teams, and I think pretty obviously throughout the season the best team in the NBA, and do it again, 111-110. The Cinderella Pacers, going into this series, a massive underdog, and I'm willing to bet they are still a massive dog to win the series even after this result, have already stolen one in Oklahoma City from the Thunder. Tyrese Halliburton just keeps doing cool stuff. I believe right after his peers voted him the most overrated player in the league in one of those anonymous player polls.
TJ McConnell land.
TJ McConnell land. I would say it's pretty good revenge if your peers say you're one of the most overrated players or the most overrated player in the league, that you just continually keep cooking them in the playoffs.
Yeah.
That's revenge as a dish best served cold. Anyway, Callis, you were saying about Skeens, though. Don't just trust the guy making the trade to do it right.
That's number one. And then also, what you get in return is not guaranteed to have any bearing, you know.
Well, yeah, it's just it is three lottery tickets. I mean, it could be good. Juan Soto, the Nationals, got three very much useful major leaguers for him, good players. If you can get a 3-for-1 where you're trading a dollar and you might have a sneaky chance, if you're using a metric like WAR that at least tries to count up and value players in a certain way, if you're doing it that way, you have a chance to maybe get somebody that you trade a dollar for and then you get a $1.05 back, even though no one's as electrifying as that. But I'm actually with you insofar as even though you can make an obvious justifiable case to do it because they're still so far away in so many areas – the reason they're so far away in so many areas is because the guy you would be asking to execute that trade has not done his job to a satisfactory level.
Well, let me spice things up a little bit, too, by saying that on the early morning show a week or two back, I said that I would consider trading O'Neal Cruz.
Really? What was the impetus behind that? Because I don't know if I can get down with
impetus
that
impetus is too big of a word right now with the reasoning behind it?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Look at me. I think that Cruz, he's got a lot of potential to do well, and I mean he's breaking out at this point in his career, but I think that there's something where I think that you could get back a reasonable return for him, and it may actually help you by strengthening the team and building up. Like, he's not a Paul Skeens, and so I'd say you could get a haul for him in a way where, like, I would rather trust the players to develop over the production that I think he gives. I mean, he got hot for a little bit there, but I don't know how sustainable his success necessarily could be for the rest of this season or 1 to 2 years down the line. I would rather get rid of him and try to find players that you can build around, or maybe just get prospects back and then go and instead of investing in an extension in him, go and invest more money in maybe one or two players in the offseason. Now, they didn't do that this past offseason.
I mean,
I
can't do that with him just because he appears to be – I know he's 26, so he's not young as far as quote-unquote – I don't want to call him a prospect, but as young talent in the game of baseball, 26 ain't young. He is, though, having his obvious best season.
Yeah.
Like, he is an upward trajectory guy, and the whole point, the whole conceit behind trading Paul Skeens as a hypothetical discussion is you have no positional talent. You don't have bats. You trade O'Neal Cruz, you think you don't have bats now, you really don't have bats at that point.
Right.
The return is lesser than what you would get for Skeens is the problem.
Yeah, that makes sense. No argument. Yeah, I just kind of threw that out there because I was thinking about it, because I don't know, like, here was my further reasoning was that I don't know how much more he can go up. Like, he's having his best season right now, but where is the O'Neal Cruz ceiling to the point where if you needed to trade him, if you weren't going to extend him and get a return back, like, where is his return going to be maximized? And I get that their offense is barren, but their offense is barren at this point with or without him in the lineup.
It's the you're doing the old Branch Rickey. We can finish last with you. We can finish last without you for Ralph Kiner. But I guess my thought with him is you're so thin and you have so few people. Like you said, what's his ceiling? His ceiling is one of the best players in baseball, like a top five player. And I do think it is frustrating at times to watch a guy. I think he generally applies himself, but I do think there are some like I's that could be dotted and T's that could be crossed with O'Neal Cruz.
Yeah,
that would help him and help the Pirates a lot more. But I think for me, trading him is off the table. Here's another one. I'll pivot. We'll just continue to do a little baseball chatter. Should Ben Cherington be able to save his job via the job Don Kelly does or doesn't do the rest of the year?
Absolutely not.
Good.
Go away.
Good.
Ben Cherington. Can I say that on the
Yes, videos? You can say
okay,
it. Yeah, I mean,
away.
Dude, I've called for him to be fired constantly.
Because you can't have an offseason like this one where you're trying to build on 76 wins. You've got back-to-back seasons of 76 wins. 76, 76, draft. Don't like it, right? So you want to build upon that, and then you don't. And you don't address one of the primary needs that you had in the offseason. This one is a no-brainer. I can't trust this man to do anything. Where are the returns? Like, where are the prospects? Other than Paul Skeens, which was a give me, where are any other of the prospects that he's drafted? They're not coming up. They're not developing at a rate that you'd expect them to develop at. And this, to me, is just a no-brainer. Like, give me a fresh face in there, especially since you got rid of the manager that Ben Cherington hired. You just let him go a month or so ago. Like, get rid of that whole regime. Let's start over. I mean, Don Kelly might be a manager to build on, but I don't trust Ben Cherington with anything right now.
Well, the problem with Cherington is, and firing him, and I would do it, but like, I guess the devil's advocacy type of position there is, well, wait a minute. The new guy might want to come in and blow the whole thing up and put their own unique individual stamp on it. Do you really want to tolerate that? And to that I would say, I would make it a condition that, hey, you have to at least go 1 year. You can't trade Skeens. If you wait an extra year, you're not going to get that much less of a return for the player here. But even if they didn't put that condition on it, and even if they hired a new GM and said, honestly, man, just play in your sandbox, do whatever the hell you want, is it going to get any worse than what we witnessed at the start of this year, where you have this team that was, you know, from the owner on down saying, we are going to contend. There is an urgent need for us to win. And starting 12-26 and having that very same owner say, I think I have done all that I needed to do to put this team in a position to win. I don't know how much lower you can go. So if somebody said they wanted to start another 4-5 year plan, it couldn't be worse than what Cherington executed.
Right. I think fans would give a new general manager a little bit of grace because you are now rebuilding from –
You're rebuilding the rebuild. Like, some started to build your house up, and then you tore it down when they really only had the studs and the framing up, and you're just doing it again.
You want to do it again, and you want to do it better. I mean, so I think there'd be leniency. But if you keep rebuilding under Ben Cherington, there's going to be frustration there. And then I had a second point, and it slipped my mind. And so now I'm mad at myself. I had a really good one, too.
About Cherington?
Something like that. What were we talking about? Say what you just said again. Say the last 10 words.
What, about Cherington?
Yeah.
I think I said the last 10 words would have been something to the effect of how much worse can it really be than the way they started where the owner said that there was an urgency to win and then they did virtually nothing.
Here's what I wanted to say too. Right now, we're at such a poor point.
Jog the old memory right there.
We're at such a poor point in this season for the Pirates, and I don't think people realize this because the Colorado Rockies have overshadowed how bad the Pirates are. The last time I checked the standings, which was a day or two ago, the Pirates actually are the second worst team in the National League.
That's correct. So
think about that, too. It's not just like, okay, they had a slow start and they at least have 20 wins. No, I mean, the Rockies, other than them just getting their 10th win a couple days ago, Like, I think the Rockies overshadow a lot of, like, how set back the Pirates are this season. It's something you might not think of right away because you see how bad the Rockies are. But then when you look at it, you're like, yeah, they're the second worst team in the National League.
That's a good point.
Not good.
That actually, I do like that from you, Harry, because it's easy to point do the point and laugh. Like, do the Simpsons laugh. But, like, they knew they were probably going to be bordering on historically bad.
Yeah.
The White Sox of last year knew. I do think that is an under... I don't want to say undersold because I think on the station we all generally do a pretty good job of finding every angle of every story. I think that's kind of what happens when you have about 9 or 10 different minds that might be working on figuring out those angles. Dorn was saying stuff during the next up on the fan tryouts in there that me and Crowley weren't thinking of and vice versa.
You even said I made a good point.
He did. He put you over in wrestling terms. I do think the fact that they said this was a contending year and they are as bad as you said is really an indictment. So too is the pretty widely known, how would I describe this? I won't call it a rumor because this has been talked about by a lot of people, that when their analytics team went through their own internal projections, like basically did the, here's the roster we have. Computer, spit me out a win total. You know what I mean?
10,000 simulations.
Yeah, doing the old 10,000 simulations bit again. But their models modeled them as a 76-win team.
Jeez.
So I think you get down another rabbit hole here, and it's 11-18, and that's why we go down these deep rabbit holes at night. What does it say about the health and state of baseball? And I understand that Rob Manfred once called the trophy a piece of metal. I understand that if Rob Manfred could make a deal right now with the devil behind closed doors that would ensure Yankees, Dodgers in every World Series, he would make it. He would cut his arm open and sign that deal in blood. He'd be so happy to do it, and it would run green for all the money he feels like he'd make. What does it say about, broadly speaking, the state of baseball when integral to their success on some level is at least one or two small market teams every year defying expectations and making it into that playoff push so they can talk about their league's overall level of parity, Callis. And you've got the Pirates supposedly trying to be one of those teams building what their own projections say is a 76-win roster. And
I just want people to use their damn eyes.
Do you know what's really sad, though? Huntington did that, too, but they did actually overperform. He would build rosters that internally they would say, I think this might be an 83-win team, and then they'd outperform it by 5, 10, 15 wins.
They won 98 games in 2015.
That was a team that I bet you if you had gone to, like, Pacoda and all those crazy, like, things that zips all those fan graphs projections, I bet you they were projected to be an 84, 85-win team.
Let me tell you this, and this is...
And I know you probably don't, like, subscribe to those projections, but that's how a lot of, like, baseball people inside the sport look at it.
Well, I'll do you one different because I'm a video gamer. People aren't surprised by that. I used to get a lot of my baseball... just updates from how roster updates would go in the MLB video game. And me and my friend were talking about this back in the day, how underrated the Pirates felt in 2015, where you had a bunch of these players rated in the 70s. But then you look back on it and you think and you talk about projections, and that kind of matches up with where the video game developers and Major League Baseball saw the Pirates, where you had these players that weren't really great if you encompass their 2 or 3 year spans based on these ratings. But then you think about it, they had so many spectacular moments where they came together as a team, things that you can't really tangibilize, if that's a word, and they end up winning 98 games.
By the way, O'Neill Cruz, who you would have been open to trading, RBI single, cuts the Houston lead from 3-2, 4-2 now, Astros, Pirates with gold at the lines. One of my old favorite Lanny Fritteri sayings.
Yeah, they're just still...
I think Greg Brown used it, too.
They're still the second worst team in the National League. Yay. I don't know what you want me to say to that.
23-39. Marlins, same number of wins, two fewer games. Man, you know it's a team just, Harry, since we're doing what I would call going down the leaderboard here a little bit. A team that I know was beset by injuries badly early in the year. I'm shocked that the Braves haven't gotten like up off the deck yet here.
Yeah.
27-33, man.
They're usually consistent, but not so
much. I think they're one of the best run organizations in baseball. Atlanta's a much bigger city than Pittsburgh, but it's not per se a top 5 market. It's more like a top 10 to 12 market. And to see them just continue to struggle to figure it out, and I think some of it's bad run luck because they probably should be a slightly over 500 team, is just wild.
Arizona surprised me a little bit too. Not that they're as consistently good as the Braves in history, but they, for what they did over the last couple of seasons, they've started not great.
Also, Milwaukee, by the way, death taxes and the Brewers finding a way. They're 34-29. The Cardinals are 33-27. Like, what are we doing here?
The Brewers,
man,
seem to always find a way to be competitive, even if they don't make the playoffs.
What are we doing? The Detroit Tigers have the best record in baseball. Like,
how about that? what is going on? See, because I think some of these teams are using their eyes, and I think the Pirates don't use their eyes enough. Just use your damn eyes. Evaluate the talent. Don't
Well, they
the
tinker.
Simulations.
There's too much tinkering, too, though. You could talk about a lack of analytics, but I think they tinker, and that's based on what their eyes tell them, and they tinker and they tinker, and sometimes that just leads you in a road to nowhere, and I think that's where it's led them.
Do you think the players are aware that there are simulations that may be directing managerial decisions, and maybe that...
Players know about it for sure. I mean, A.J. Burnett knew that. A.J. Burnett, when he pitched here, and he and Hurdle would butt heads at times, even though what the Pirates did back then was actually somewhat on the cutting edge, and it absolutely helped Burnett objectively. Burnett knew that they were setting their defense a certain way because of certain things that they were doing behind the scenes.
Is that why Sean Rodriguez played first base in the wildcard game in 2015?
Don't get me started. But Burnett knew that stuff and still didn't like it, and he basically had to grudgingly go along with it because it was working. But, yeah, I mean, the players are aware.
Burnett signed with the Phillies in 2014. You think that's because he got taken out because of...
I'm not sure, but I know that I thought that was an interesting object lesson, too, that he goes to Philly, and he wasn't terrible, but he clearly wasn't the guy he was in 13 with the Pirates. He comes back in 15 and actually became that guy again. I think there's probably a lesson in there about the Huntington regime and what they were doing at that point.
The Phillies were over-relying on veteran pitching to try to win, and that did not work.
By the way, so you know how Skeens had... could have been a 1-0 loss had Santana not given up a 2-run shot. Mm-hmm. And he would have gone 8, given up 1, and still taken the L. Do you know, since the wild card era started, which is 1995, the starting pitcher in Major League Baseball with the most games where they went 8 at least, could have gone 9, but went at least 8, gave up just 1 run, and lost a 1-0 decision?
How often does that happen?
To the
eight innings.
Eight plus eight or more innings. So it could have been 9. They could have pitched the full 9 innings.
Was it Rich Hill?
No. This guy has had it happen to him since 1995. This guy had it happen to him 4 times.
Oh, 4 times.
He had gone at least 8. I'll tell you this. It's a guy who pitched, I believe, for the Yankees, and he definitely pitched against the Yankees in a World Series. Lefty, who was, when he got on a roll, man, there were a few guys. He wasn't, like, overpowering, but he just mowed people down.
Levon Hernandez, was it?
No, lefty. Started with Cleveland.
Jeez.
Started with Cleveland.
Don't tell me.
Was on the Phillies.
Cliff Lee?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Clifford. Clifford Lee, 4 times. Greinke had it happen 3, Burnett 3. And we were, what, a 2-run homer being not on the board from Paul Skeens, having it happen twice in like 30-plus starts. Not great. Guess what? Guardian Protection, tote board, time for a check of that right now. And per what our boss is sending out, we're over 62,000 here. We are within $5,000 of last year's total, and I think with what we have planned for tomorrow morning to wrap this up, I have a feeling we're going to get there. You can help us get there right now still, even a little bit if you're chipping it in. 412-207-3456. You text FIRE, F-I-R-E, to 412-207-3456, or go online, 937thefan.com. You too can donate. Coming up, it's me and Callis. The Pacers have pulled a stunner in Game 1 of the NBA Finals. Tyrese Halliburton, this gets overused a lot. Tyrese Halliburton on a generational all-time run in these playoffs of just clutching opposing teams. He gave the choke sign in Madison Square, got away with it. He goes into what I would call the lion's den of the best team in the league in Oklahoma City, a cauldron, and just casually puts a dagger into them in Game 1. Feels a little like Kirk Gibson against the A's in 1988. Speaking of which, Callis, that just gave me the idea for the next segment. You're going to have to figure out exactly what's going on in the brain of Malzy. And Callis is going to have to do the exact same thing, too. Coming up next, Fan 5 Alarm Marathon rolls on live from the Upper St. Clair Volunteer Fire Department. Chris Muller, Harry Callis on 93.7.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Live here from the Upper St. Clair Volunteer Fire Department, it is the Fan 5 Alarm Marathon. A reminder that you can get your Fan 5 Alarm Marathon t-shirts at KeystoneCustomApparel.com. I'm wearing mine. Callis is wearing his. I think we've sweated through them and dried out in them twice a piece today at least.
I was given two. And really? How about this, by the way? They didn't have another 3X, and so I was bored. I'm like, can I fit in the 2X? Let me try. I fit in the 2X.
Awaken 180, brother.
That's right.
Awaken 180. You can thank them. I just randomly had a thought while we were talking in the last segment, and I brought up Kirk Gibson's home run in 1988. Beats the Athletics, the heavily favored Athletics, in game one of that World Series. Tyrese Halliburton just put a dagger in the heavily favored, historically heavily favored Thunder in game one of the NBA Finals. I love that Gibson home run. It is probably, Harry, and I mean this, and I've seen the Bill Mazeroski home run a million times. I've seen, it's kind of poverty franchise type of stuff to say this, but, the Russell Martin home run off Cueto, all that. I've seen all those Pirates home runs. I remember Joe Carter winning the World Series in 93 off of Mitch Williams. The Kirk Gibson home run, for sheer cinematic, unbelievable quality, is probably my favorite home run in sports history. Okay. It also is the rare play that has not one iconic play that has not one but two truly great calls. Vin Scully's call.
Can I do Jack Buck's?
Please.
I don't believe what I just saw. I don't believe what I just saw.
Yes. There's his, which I like the start of his, which is high fly ball to right field. There's going to be a home run. He's incredulous, and it's awesome, and it brings out the moment. And then I get goosebumps talking about the play because I just think it's so cool. Gibson gets up all disgusted because I think he sees on the broadcast, they say, and Kirk Gibson won't be playing tonight. He gets pissed off, basically drags himself into his uniform, takes a couple swings off the tee, tells Lasorda he can go. And one of my favorite things is Scully makes the call, and Scully's doing his typical – I forget who was on the – I always forget this – who was on the call with him on TV because he worked alone so late in his career, and he's so good at it. But he swings. There's a high fly ball to right field. She is gone. And as you're seeing the ball go out and these delirious fans and this incredible scene, all these cars – that had left Chavez Ravine early and were trying to get out of there, slam on their brake lights, hearing Scully call this, because I think they might have been simulcasting it at that point on the Dodgers radio network.
So,
and I just think, so what I was going to get to here, and you can sound off on that in a second, is I wanted to just run by you, a guy who loves baseball and loves broadcasting, your favorite calls in any sport, but especially baseball.
Boy,
that's the number, a number one for me.
That is a good question. That's something I have to think about because there's so many. I mean,
here's another one that I like, and it's Joe Buck. And I think Joe Buck, a lot of people, he grew on me after years of thinking, look at this Nepo baby. Come on, you're not your dad.
He never had energy beforehand, and I think he needed a little bit of that, and now he's trying. But now he pretty much just only does football.
Well, the thing about him that was cool with baseball is, the thing about Joe Buck that I came to appreciate, much more self-aware about how people perceived him than people thought he would be. Very self-aware, very self-effacing when he wants to be. When Freeze hits the home run when the Rangers should have won the World Series and Cruz drops what should have been the third out in the game, game-ending play, and he does a "we will see you tomorrow night," that's a pretty good callback to his dad's "we will see you tomorrow night." Mm-hmm. Those are some ones that stick out in my head. Do you prefer, by the way, the Jack Buck or the Vin Scully of the Kirk Gibson one?
I think they're each put in different contexts, because radio you can't see. But I like Jack Buck's. I like the energy from that one. I like the "I don't believe what I just saw," because it was such a – I mean, that moment was crazy. But I was going to say about that –
Scully went a full silent minute on NBC.
Yeah.
Gibson's rounding the bases after he has said, "she is gone." He doesn't say another word until, and I think, man, what a delivery. And I'll give whoever it was, I'll look this up while we're talking here, who was on the color commentary. His next line is phenomenal. He goes, in a season that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened. And it's one of the few times I felt like watching something, even knowing the outcome, you're watching Gibson, like, unable to literally run.
Yeah, well, the Oakland A's were supposed to sweep that series.
Right, and just for him to say that was perfect, dude.
And, you know, Jose Canseco hits a grand slam earlier in the game, and you just think, yep, that's it. The Dodgers crawled back, and, yeah, so I there was this video game. This was World Series edition of a 2005 video game I used to play when I was little that I got at a game store for very cheap. Because it was retro at that point. It was like several years old. But it came with a video package of documentaries of some of the most impactful World Series of the last 30 years from 2005 backwards. And I learned a lot about different World Series and these different moments from that video. And I could tell you almost everything about the first game of that series because, like, Dennis Eckersley was just supposed to be the guy. It's just like he cleans it up.
Let me ask if you've heard this little bit of lore. Are you aware of why Gibson knew, like, what was coming on 3-2? Do you know that Gibson basically was dead certain of what was coming on 3-2?
Yeah, so I think Eckersley didn't think that Gibson could reach outside because he had that slider. But Gibson knew. He's like, yeah, sure as I'm standing here, you're going to throw that 3-2 backdoor slider. And he did, and Gibson reached out over the plate and literally
flicked it over the fence, basically. Well, the story goes, and I forget which scout it was, but it came out in the wash later. The Dodgers had some advanced scout who had studied Eckersley closely enough, and you'll love this because it's getting eyeballs on somebody. And he basically went back in the days of tape being a lot more rudimentary and you're not on an iPad being able to call up like exact pitches with the programs that they use, right? That's proprietary. And he basically found that when Eckersley got to 3-2 on anybody, his go-to pitch was actually a backdoor slider to lefties. So when he got to 3-2 on lefties, he'd try to backdoor slider. Okay, so there's that great moment right before the pitch is thrown. They're close up on Gibson on the NBC broadcast, and he's all set. He wiggles the bat, then he immediately calls time. And I don't know if you've seen this part. He basically says, "I stopped and thought for a second and remembered that when he gets 3-2 on lefties, he almost always throws the backdoor slider. So I decided to sit on it."
That's exactly what he said from what I saw in the documentary. He called time, he stepped out, and he said, "Partner, as sure as I'm standing here, you're going to throw that 3-2 backdoor slider, aren't you?" And then he stepped back in and he hit the home run.
I mean, that is – it's just so cool, man. It's just such a – it's a moment in time that I think is so awesome.
And even, you know, even like the context of that home run, like Eckersley, I believe it was only like the 14th walk he had all year. The batter before he walked to set that moment up.
Mike Davis. Mm-hmm. Or no, he didn't walk Davis. Davis came in as a pinch runner, I believe.
I forget who it was. I don't remember. But I know it was a walk, and I know it was very rare that he would walk anybody whenever he was on the mound that year. And Greg, did you hand me this? Greg handed me some of his thoughts on best calls.
Jim Nance. Oh, Nance's Villanova buzzer beater against North Carolina is awesome. Jay Wright basically just like stunting on people, like acting like he was like nothing had happened when Chris Jenkins hits the winner. I'll give Grant Hill a lot of credit on that call. He goes, "Jenkins," or like it was either him or Clark Kellogg, and he'd go, "And Jenkins, watch Jenkins," and Jenkins is coming up, and Archie Diacono flips it back. Poor Nance gets one of the best calls of his career ruined by fireworks going off. Villanova, phenomenal! Like, and Nance, you know, Nance's golf calls are all legendary, a win for the ages. I'm not even like a huge Tiger Woods guy, but like that's a cool one. Matt Vasgersian. It's tougher for Matt for guys like that, though. I think it's hard to break through. Here's another. You want to get?
He's
really
one of my favorite announcers.
We're really on tangents right now.
Yes.
You want to know what's another one that bothers me? They have tried to, and this happens at almost every level. A lot of these broadcasters coming up, they're trying to like beat homogeneity into these guys and women. It's like, oh, no. You have like some signature stuff that might be interesting and good. Nah, we don't really want that. Mike Lang was one of the last of a dying breed. Gus has jumped the shark. The Maserati Marv crap is just, you're trying too hard, buddy. What's the line in Mean Girls? Quit trying to make Fetch happen or something like that.
Well, may he rest in peace. I mean, he's...
Who?
I think Gus Johnson.
No.
Who am I thinking of? Gus, isn't there a Gus that passed away as an announcer?
No.
Somebody, Greg Giannotti.
Greg Gumbel.
That's it. Sorry.
So you tried to put Gus Johnson and Greg Giannotti in the grave.
I'm tired.
6 feet under. Yeah, you'll keep using that as an excuse, but it's a decent one. No, I mean, they've just like Rick Jeanneret was the Sabres announcer for a long time. He scores! And he would do signature type of stuff too. And I do dislike the fact that it feels like that's being discouraged at the national sort of level.
I think that certain announcers get too excited and they forget about the moment, which is, if we're going to circle back to Vin Scully and that call, like the fact that there was silence for that broadcast, where everybody knew, let's just let the pictures tell the story. There's nothing you can say. I think sometimes announcers want to say too much and try to like make the stamp about them, whether conscious or not about it. And I think that's part of why maybe that's where announcers get steered more toward being calm or neutral or not as signature as you put.
Well, that Scully's the all-time example on the Gibson home run. He doesn't talk for all that time. It was Joe Garagiola, by the way, who was his color man on that 1980. No, I mean, player. I don't think he was an ump, but I have not, frankly, looked into it.
Yeah, I'm going to stop guessing.
Anyway, Garagiola, by the way, is great on that because Davis steals the base, and then Scully says something like, they don't need the power of Gibson, they just need a hit. And then Garagiola, who was a catcher in his playing days, Davis steals the base easily, and Gibson kind of leans forward and I think it was, I forget who the A's catcher was on that 88 team, but he's, Ron Hassey, I think it was. And he's saying, Hassey complaining that he was in his way, but he had the base stolen. It just, the whole thing is like this. If you're listening to this show this late, by the way, Callis and Malzy here, we're just riffing now. I mean, we're playing jazz here.
Yeah.
Go and watch, if you have a chance. It's the full 9-plus-minute call of Kirk Gibson's at-bat. And I would just say, again, to circle back to where this all began, and I was thinking about it because Halliburton hit a winning shot and all that. I defy anybody. Like, if you wrote a movie script that had all those elements and played out that way, people would be like, that's a little unbelievable. You mean to tell me the guy could barely walk, has two bad legs, and he does that? And it actually happened, and that's why I just love it so much. Anyway, that was a love letter to one of my all-time favorite plays, maybe my all-time favorite play in sports.
And now do you want a tangent quiz question?
Quick.
Who won the World Series as a player on that Dodgers team in 1988 and won a World Series as a manager for the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim in 2002? Or they were just the Anaheim Angels.
Socia, their catcher. Bang. Mike Socia.
Bang. Good job.
Coming up next, me and Callis will finish this up. I don't even know who's going from 12 to 2.
We'll find out.
Hold on. I'm going to tell you right now.
Okay.
Donnie Football and Jack Hillgrove.
I knew it was Jack Hillgrove. Somebody told me it wasn't.
It's basically the Pittsburgh media rat pack starting to form.
Wayne's
or
right.
Like the young guns of the Pittsburgh media. Just need like Emilio Estevez or something to walk through that door. All right. Take a quick break. Me and Callis will wrap things up here next. By the way, we are going to be back outside tomorrow morning at the Upper St. Clair Volunteer Fire Department, so stop by and see us tomorrow morning. You'll get 3 raffle tickets, good for gift cards to Lamont, Monticello's, Globe Airport Parking, River Ounce tickets, or an organic pest control from EV True Value. So 3 raffle tickets, put them in whichever bags you want. The choice is yours. The world's your oyster. Back soon here, Fan 5 Alarm Marathon on 93.7 The Fan.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Our Fan 5 Alarm Marathon gone wild, the midnight to 5 a.m. hours. It's going to start in 10 minutes. It's sponsored by Living Treasures Animal Park in the Laurel Highlands, so keep listening. Donnie Football, he's a polished expert in the field. Jack Hillgrove, he's got takes. Those are the young guns stepping up to the plate. They'll be on from 12 to 2. Callis, are you on again?
2 to 4. Austin Bechtel.
What are you going to do in the next 2 hours? You going to take a nap?
No, I'm going to play Wii. I brought my computer, a bunch of video games on it.
Are they Wii video games?
They are.
But you're a PC gamer, like, strictly, huh?
Yeah, so, I have a bunch of emulators on my computer, and I got a fancy disk drive so I can pull all the disk files off of that drive and just upload them to my computer.
Is it just an external hard drive?
I cannot or reveal how in depth.
Is it a solid state drive?
No, it's a little. It's a no. It's
okay. Is it something you probably shouldn't be talking about publicly?
No, it's fine. It's okay. Fine. It's not illegal. You can pull the files. You paid for the game. You get the game. If okay. I downloaded it from a shady website, that would be bad.
Yes.
But no. No. You just extract the file. It's like a literal disk drive. Like you press the button and the disk comes out. And you put the disk in the drive. Close the disk drive, and then the disk drive reads the disk, and then you. I feel like I've been talking too long, but you get the point. Like, and then you pull the file from the disk after it starts to spin, and the laser reads it, and everything. You know what I mean?
Like I think disc. I got you now.
Like you know, games have disks, right? Back in the day, I know these youth people now who are doing, you know, they're gaming. They could download their games online.
The youth, they're steaming.
Look at
me. You're doing steam.
I'm just ranting. You want to talk now? Yeah.
No, I enjoyed that little back and forth. I had fun talking about best calls in sports history by broadcasters. I think it's
even though I didn't give a single one, but that's okay.
Well, it's fun. It's a fun thing to just reminisce. That was one of the you know what? That was one of the very freeing things when I first worked here at you know I was a day one employee. I technically like to call myself as a joke a day two employee because my first shift technically started at 2 a.m. So the fan had its first full day. 6 a.m. all the way to midnight in the middle of Pony's maiden shift.
Andrew Filippiani.
And Chris Mueller.
What a song.
But, oh, I think they paid Grishecki. I would be willing to bet about $5,000 for that. You can get indicted for robbery for doing what he did there for $5,000.
Yeah.
I think Little Austin's trying to get in, by the way. I think
is the
he's
door not open? There's a
standing
door right there.
Standing there just like staring at us waving. Yeah, but that was the fun of doing that show. Obviously, you have no idea if you're ever going to like make it in the business for real. And like, there's probably a finite amount of time I would have given it, and if I hadn't moved up, so like, you know, good that things worked out when they did to the degree that they did. But that was the fun part about that. Even if there was a massive story, right, that had like Rodgers obviously signing, massive story. Even if there was one of those, by the point in time that I was on the air, say it had broken at the exact same time. Maybe I can't book anybody live unless there's an expert on Aaron Rodgers who lives in Hawaii who wants to come on. Like, you're not going to do a take, you know, you're not going to ask somebody even on the West Coast to come on at 11 a.m. or 11 p.m. their time, and that would be if they started the show with me at 2. So taping interviews is also not the easiest thing to do for that show because who knows who you are. They're not going to come on. Didn't have a Rolodex of people. And so even on a day like today, say at like, I don't know, 3:42 in the morning, 4:10 in the morning, I just decided I wanted to just riff for 10 straight minutes on something that caught my interest. Go for it. That was the beauty of that show. There was a purity to it. It was insane. It probably sucked half the time, but you just could riff. Like I said, you could play jazz, Callis.
I love jazz.
What would you
be a jazz drummer?
No.
Yeah, just go off on more tangents. And you know I wrote a bunch of music for the morning show after your diss tracks.
Yeah, the diss tracks were pretty good.
They inspired me to I actually wrote music. I wrote Cabolia's segment. I wrote a song so that we could tell Crowley to move on in a fun way whenever he starts talking about his body hair or about traffic or about things that nobody cares about, you know.
What percentage of things Crowley brings up would you say are things nobody cares about?
That's actually pretty low. It's like I'd say on that show, 11%.
Very specific percentage you
I
gave.
I'm the producer. I got to give the numbers. Very unofficial numbers. Actually.
Austin Bechtold is in here for a second. I want to bring him on because he's also a big nerd for play-by-play and broadcasting. We were just waxing poetic about the Vin Scully and Jack Buck calls of Kirk Gibson's home run in 88.
Okay.
That is probably without question, I would say at this point, my favorite moment in sports history, partly because of how like cinematic the call is and how cool it was. Which headset are you on? You sound fine, Austin. Can you not hear anything?
I could not hear anything.
All right.
No.
What is... Well, now you got to make sure your mic is actually up. Oh, my God. You're
great radio.
You're
look
a producer
at this.
Here, Austin.
Ah, jeez. No, don't turn
no,
that
no,
off.
Don't,
that's my
Austin,
ear.
Austin, you're doing that to Callis. Can you go back to the other one? Because even though you couldn't hear anything, just keep one ear clear on it. You're like...
Testing. Hello?
Yeah, you're
okay,
good.
You still hear me.
What am I? Like, your parents here? Keep one ear clear.
I apologize.
Clear. What did I do?
No, just keep one ear clear, Austin, so you can hear me.
Yeah, we're good.
So, what is Austin Bechtold's favorite call by a broadcaster?
Oh, man.
The one that sticks out. You got to pick one. And that's the only one you can listen to, and it'll never get old.
Probably,
I would take Scully on Kirk Gibson's home.
Probably Al Michaels for Miracle.
Really?
Yeah.
So just that little point, 5 seconds left, four, you know.
The amount of time that he let it breathe, do you believe in miracles? Yes. That call to me, I mean, obviously the moment was just so significant.
It was.
But just the way that Michaels went about it, I think it's very difficult broadcasting hockey.
Oh, it's a hard – I would never want to, like, try to figure that out. The constant shifting of players and off the ice, I think that's the hardest sport to do,
honestly.
I did
a full season of high school hockey last year.
Yeah, I think
that's – very difficult.
I think that's impossible. I'd give you a lot of credit for that. The Michaels call is iconic. You know, it's a funny one. You got me thinking as a tangent here. I've always, like, one of my little trolley opinions I'll kind of throw out there is, you know, the greatest upset really in sports history wasn't the Miracle on Ice. It was Douglas over Tyson because it was one guy who had no other teammates to rely on. He had to have it that night, and he did. If you ever randomly want to listen to how obviously money-focused boxing is and how, like, HBO had such a stake in wanting certain events to take place. Jim Lampley's on the call for the HBO crew doing, like, the fight for HBO. It was their fight. Tyson was their fighter. He was the meal ticket. They were setting up everything that he was going to win the fight easily and fight Evander Holyfield. So Douglas knocks him out, and the two other guys on the call are both boxing lifers, and they're getting excited. They're like, oh, like, he got him. And Lampley's call is, Mike Tyson has been knocked out, and you can hear how mad he is. Like, it doesn't come off like he's trying to be understated in a massive moment. It comes off like he realizes, like, his bosses are watching money take flight, right? So there's a guy named the General, Bob Sheridan, who was calling the fight by himself, basically, just as, like, an in-house commentator. So he's doing play-by-play and color, and he's an analyst. He's the Colonel, Bob Sheridan. If you just ever want to hear the disparity in somebody calling it pretty pure and somebody calling it with other ulterior motives, Sheridan reacts properly, like he is seeing something that defies all belief and freaks out in a good way. Then go listen to Lampley, who sounds like he's announcing his own mother's demise.
Night and day.
Yeah, it is. It is one of those, like, very funny broadcasting nerd moments that if you know the story behind the story, you kind of snicker at the whole thing. Callis, this was fun, buddy.
You really thought so?
I did.
Yay.
I had fun kicking it around with you for 2 hours, my friend. And you passed the citizenship test, and you did it on the last question, and you later admitted that you basically over-dramatized the Doran question just for radio sake.
Can I be honest with you for a second?
That makes me respect you even more.
I appreciate that. I'm actually really scared for what next week holds because I think it's been a really good week for me.
Yep.
And then sometimes when I have a really good week, then the next week is really terrible. So I kind of want to jinx that now. Look, Crowley's nodding his head. He's like, yeah, that's your
Callis, reward. Guess what,
that's
buddy? Guess what? You can only control what you can control, my friend, and that's my parting advice for
you
for
the
night.
You know what I can control tomorrow? How much I sleep because I'm out of here around 4 in the morning.
Guess what?
Actually, I'm going to sleep in one of the beds here. Anyway, go ahead.
Fan 5 Alarm Marathon Gone Wild starts in a couple minutes. Talk to you, I don't know, point in time to be determined in the future. I think it'll actually be for Going Low Saturday morning. Thanks to everybody here at the Upper St. Clair Volunteer Fire Department. They have been incredibly gracious hosts, and we hope you can continue to donate to help out these and other volunteer fire departments in the area for our 5 Alarm Marathon. Talk to you later. It's Donnie. It's Jack Hillgrove, next on The Fan.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.